This is Ask Chef Jacob Podcast, Episode 1. Let's talk Briochean stuff. And here we go. Chef Jacob Byrne here from AskChefJacob.com. Your place to get your culinary questions answered. At least that's what I'm calling it. In our first episode of the Ask Chef Jacob podcast, we're going to be talking Briochean stuff, kind of giving you a bit of a crash course. But first, I want to let you know what you're getting yourself into. If you have ears and you never heard me before, you should probably hit the stop button right now and just walk away. This is not something that you want to be listening to. I'm just going to tell you that right now. This is actually for the Stella Culinary Community. So I do an educational website out of my R&D kitchen called StellaCulinary.com. So we have Stella Kitchen where we teach cooking classes, do our big boot camp events, really, you know, just anything to make you a better cook. We also do some pop-up dinners and lots of R&D on recipes. So that's kind of our MO. And then our online outlet to, you know, share the information with the world is StellaCulinary.com. So, you know, we're really big on technique over dogma, understanding the hows and whys behind food, the food science, you know, just being really dorky and geeky about food. And we have a pretty active forum community on StellaCulinary.com, and they started asking me all these different questions. And I just found, you know, it's easier sometimes to pop on the microphone and just hit record and answer it like that. And for whatever reason, they actually dug hearing me get on the mic and ramble. So, I mean, hell, I mean, who am I to judge? So if they want to hear me ramble, I'm going to keep on rambling, right? So this is for them. If you're just stumbling across this podcast randomly on iTunes or something, I apologize. If for whatever reason you want to listen to some food dork ramble on about brioche and pressure frying and, you know, how to do the best chicken wings and stuff like that, I mean, I guess maybe you might want to stick around. But fair warning, all right? Don't say I didn't warn you. Don't be shooting me emails complaining about, hey, Jacob, you big dork, just rambling about food. Why don't you get to the friggin' point? So that's that. Also, too, so I do the Stella Culinary School podcast, which is more of a structured lecture environment. You know, a lot of research goes into it. I mean, some of the podcasts take, you know, a good 40 hours to do with the research and the recording and all that stuff. So this podcast, the Ask Chef Jacob podcast, found online at AskChefJacob.com. Got to get my cheap plug in there. Is more about having a conversational tone and being quick to market, you know. So when you ask me a question, I can just pop on the mic, record it, and then shoot you the answer. So that way you can implement the information in that question into your cooking right away. All right. So that's kind of the idea behind this podcast, which means it's going to be more casual. I'm not going to go through and edit out all my ums and ahs and you know, stuff like that. Also taking sips of coffee in the morning. I sometimes edit that stuff out of my main podcast because, quite frankly, it's annoying. And I know you don't want to listen to that. But if you want to get your question answered, you're going to have to put up with some of that crap. So that's just how I roll with this podcast. So again, don't say I didn't warn you. With that said, let's go to our first audio question, which is cool. So I love the audio questions. I'll be pulling questions from forum comments, from emails that people send me. Really, I just want to get your questions answered. But I really like the audio comments because I get to hear your voice, and it's kind of fun. It seems conversational. So let's listen to our first audio submission.
Hey, hey, Jacob.
What's up?
This is Wartface.
Who? I don't know no Wartface.
My real name is Brian.
Ah, so Brian. See, I'm trying to have a conversation with them, but yeah, it's all recorded. What's
I
up?
I like this.
Yeah,
I like this
place is nice, right?
Being able to talk to you personally.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you, me, and Meathead.
That's a weird names going on.
A special project. So,
what project?
I would like to be able to discuss the transition of that brioche hamburger bun in person with you whenever possible.
Well, now it's possible.
I've never cooked a hamburger bun. I've never made brioche bread. But I'm going to tell you, over the next 3 or 4 days, I'm going to figure it out. So,
well, I like your fortitude.
You give me.
Oh, I got help.
Would be greatly appreciated. Talk to you later.
Yeah, you got it. So there goes Wartface, one crazy dude, and I don't know how he got my phone number. Just kidding. Wartface is actually a pretty awesome member of the Stella Culinary Forum community, but he's also a member of the AmazingRibs.com community, where if you are a barbecue grill nut, Amazing Ribs is just this massive resource ran by a guy named Meathead. Yeah, Wartface, Meathead, I know. Some really strange names going on here. However, if you're a total dork when it comes to cooking barbecue, Amazing Ribs is where it's at. So it just, you know, makes sense that they want to be able to bake an awesome brioche bun to put their hamburger in, right? And so this guy, Wartface, is starting on his down the baking path, and he's been turning out some pretty awesome bread. I have a really geeky bread series on StellaCulinary.com, episodes 18 through 22 that take you all the way through, you know, the very basics of fermentation and how to mix your dough, all the way into some very advanced level sourdough bread information and the science behind it. So Wartface went through all my videos, all the podcast episodes on sourdough bread. And he decided that now he wants to use that information and that knowledge to tackle brioche buns. Hence his rambling question there. Thanks, Wartface. Just kidding, bud. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Wartface a quick crash course in brioche. Now, if you're unfamiliar with what brioche is basically what you call a rich dough bread. So you have in the classification of breads, you have two major classifications and then sort of these branches that, you know, break off into subdivisions of that classification. And those classifications are lean dough and rich dough. Now, a lean dough is something like a baguette or an artisan sourdough boule, something that contains very little fat or no fat at all. And that gives you the texture of those tougher, chewier types of bread like the baguette or the ciabatta. Okay. Now, when you start adding fat to your bread dough, it starts to become a rich dough. And usually the cutoff point is anything above 5% fat based upon the baker's percentage, which I have a separate video on that. So if you search StellaCulinary.com for baker's percentage, that will pop up. So if you have more than 5% fat based upon the weight of your flour in your bread formulation, then you start getting into rich dough territory. Now, the richest of the rich doughs is brioche, and it's that very buttery, almost cake-like rolls and buns and bread that the French are very famous for. Now, to really have a conversation on brioche, we need to first look at what fat does to your bread formulation. So when you add fat to bread in very small quantities, especially if you're using fat that is solid at room temperature, like butter or most animal fats, it will actually allow a little bit of extra elasticity in the gluten structure of your bread, allowing for a little bit of a larger rise and a little bit of a larger oven spring, giving you basically a more airy finished product, but just ever so slightly. Now, gluten structure is what allows bread to rise in the first place. So you have gluten and gliadin proteins that when they are hydrated in the bread dough, when you add that water, they connect together and form gluten. And this gluten is basically like a mesh network that is stretchy. And this is what holds the gas in when your bread is rising. And that's what allows the bread to actually be airy. Now, the more fat you add, the shorter those gluten strands become, and this is why you see terms like vegetable shortening, which is basically a vegetable fat that is used to make tender crusts or tender breads by adding enough fat to that gluten structure to shorten those gluten strands. And the shorter your gluten strands, the less complex of a network you have. And so the more tender your crumb will be, and the crumb is the interior texture of your bread. So it's all about finding that balance. So when you add fat, it's, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, how much structure do I want this bread to have? Do I want it to have a more of a cakey texture? and do I want it to have more of a bready, chewy texture? And for brioche buns, you kind of want to hit dead center where you have that tender, almost cake-like texture, but it still has some chew to it. It still tastes like bread. So there's a couple of different methods to approach brioche. The first is how you incorporate the fat into your dough. So if you want to have a more bread-like brioche bun, which I think is going to make you happier for a burger bun, because if a burger bun is too cake-like, it's just, you know, it's going to fall apart. It's going to start to crumble on you. It's not going to have that squishy, chewy texture that you want in a burger bun. So to get that sort of texture, you want to mix your water-based ingredients, basically your eggs and your milk, and a lot of times a whole milk is used. You want to mix that first with your flour before adding your fat, and brioche, the traditional fat, is butter. So if you do that first, what's going to happen is the water in the milk and the water in the eggs is going to allow the gluten structure to start to form. So normally you would mix the water and the eggs, or excuse me, the milk and the eggs together first with the flour, let that rest, or what we call autolyse, for about 30 minutes. And during that 30-minute period, you have that gluten network. It starts to hydrate and it starts to form. Now, after that, you then mix in your butter, and that butter is going to add richness, but because the gluten network has already had a chance to form, you're going to kind of get a good structure to your buns that rise appropriately, but they're still going to have some richness, which is what you're looking for. Now, the second approach is if you want like a more cake-like brioche texture, then what you would do is you actually mix the fat with your flour first, and then you incorporate your water-based ingredients, again, your milk and your eggs. So if that was the case, if you wanted to be more cake-like, you would use the paddle attach. So this is the stuff that I would normally edit out, but we're going to keep on rolling. So you would use the paddle attachment of your KitchenAid mixer, or just your hands, and you would mix your butter and your flour together first until they're evenly incorporated, and then you'd add your eggs, and then you'd add your milk, and then you'd get a dough that is a lot more tender and more cake-like when it bakes. And it's, you're going to notice if you go this route, you're not going to get as much oven spring, and it's not going to proof as much because you're not going to have that gluten structure to really hold that gas in. And the oven spring that you do get, a lot of that is actually caused by the steam within the bread. When that liquid in the bread during the baking process converts into steam and applies upward pressure to the dough. So you will get some oven spring, but you're going to notice that you have a more cake-like texture. Also, too, when you're making brioche, there is the direct and indirect method. And the direct method is you mix all of your ingredients, you bulk ferment, which means you allow the yeast to go through and eat some of the starches in the flour and convert that into their byproducts of alcohol and gas. And so that bulk fermentation is your dough rising. And then once the dough rises a little bit, you knock it down by, or what you call punching it down, divide, form into your buns or whatever, and then shape and proof. So that's the direct method, shape, proof, bake. The indirect method is you do an autolyse step first where you mix the water-based ingredients with the flour. Then you add your fat later after the autolyse, so you're along with your yeast. So you're allowing the flour to hydrate first. And then what truly makes it the indirect method is you're letting it hang out overnight in your walk-in. Or excuse me, I say walk-in because I have a walk-in refrigerator here, but you let it hang out overnight in your fridge. And what this does is it slows down the fermentation of the yeast up front, and it allows some of the enzymes in the flour, including amylase, to be hydrated and kind of go to work and continue to convert the starches in the flour into fermentable sugars that the yeast can then eat. And this is going to give you a little bit of a sweeter dough. It's going to give you a little bit of a better oven spring. And it's going to give you better browning on the crust when you go to bake because you have more starch converted into sugar. Now, one of the intermediary steps that you can do, one of the additive ingredients that you can add, and one of the recipes that you sent me to look at was adding amylase. And amylase is an enzyme that is contained within the germ of the flour, mainly the germ of the flour. And the amylase enzyme will go through once hydrated and convert the starch in the flour into sugars, simple sugars that the yeast can then eat and have a more powerful fermentation process. Now, this same thing is accomplished by using the indirect method where you're basically letting the dough hang out overnight in your refrigerator. But the amylase will allow you to use it as the direct method where you add the amylase directly into the flour that you're mixing and the dough recipe that you're mixing, and then you don't have to let it retard in the refrigerator overnight, which is slowing down that fermentation. So amylase will also allow for more shelf stability, and that's why you'll see a lot of it is used in commercial bread dough formulations, especially bread dough formulations that don't contain a whole lot of whole wheat, which would contain the wheat germ, which would naturally have occurring amylase in it. So because the flour is sifted into white flour, a lot of that amylase in the bran is sifted out, which means that the amylase then needs to be added back in later on, which basically is just going to help the fermentation process. So that's when you were asking Wartface about, why would I add amylase? Well, that's the reason. It allows you to quicken the production of your brioche buns and make it a one-day process, or basically a 4 to 5 hour process total instead of an overnight process. But as we talk about in depth in the bread series that we do, the longer you, when you slow down fermentation, you have more complex flavors. So what I would recommend that you do, Wartface, and I'm going to talk to you in baker's percentage, so go ahead and grab a pen and take this down. If other people listening in, if you're not aware of the baker's percentage, go ahead and listen to our bread baking series. But I also have a separate video on stellacoloring.com that has the baker's percentage in it. But for some of this stuff to make sense, you're really going to have to listen to our bread baking series if you want some more in-depth information. But so for your test recipe, Wartface, what I would recommend is 100% bread flour, because you still want to have some gluten structure. And then we're going to tame that gluten structure by the addition of fat. So first we're going to form the gluten structure by taking 100% bread flour. And I want you to mix this by hand. Okay. So in a bowl, take 100% bread flour. And I want you to mix in about 22% whole milk and 50% whole eggs. Okay, mix that together, and I want you to allow that to auto-lease for a half hour. Okay, so cover it with plastic wrap, walk away, come back, and auto-lease at room temperature. And you might even want to let it go as long as 2 hours if you have the time. Because what we're allowing it to do is we want to awaken the enzymes within the flour that start to convert complex starches in the flours into simple sugar. Now, after the autolyse, come back, mix in your yeast. And at this point, I would just use a small amount of yeast. You can use like a pack, like a packet of yeast. But for most home batches that you're going to do, I'd say maybe 3 to 4 grams of yeast, but just go ahead and sprinkle some in, because we're gonna do a delayed fermentation here. So next, what I want you to do is you add in the yeast, the salt, the sugar. So for salt, I'd go 1.5% by the flour's weight. For sugar, I'd go 3% by the flour's weight. And then for the butter, let's go 30%. Okay, and what that's gonna do is the butter's gonna give you a tender crumb, but because of our auto-lease step, we've already developed some gluten structure. So mix in the butter. It helps to have the butter cubed and at slightly below room temperature, but not, refrigeration temperature. And mix that in by hand, okay, and really kind of work the dough together. And as you work the dough by hand, it's going to warm up a little bit and start to incorporate that butter. Now I want you to use the slap and fold technique on a non-floured work surface. So slap the dough down. The dough that sticks to your hands, I want you to fold over the front of that dough, scooping that dough back up, and then slap down again, fold over, and continue. Now, I do demonstrate this in our basic sourdough bread recipe, which you can find at stellacoloring.com/SB, which stands for Stella Bread. So stellacoloring.com/SB. And you'll see our basic sourdough bread recipe there, in which I demonstrate the slap and fold technique. Now, after you slap and fold and it starts to become a cohesive piece of dough, I want you to allow it to proof at room temperature for about an hour, and then I want you to stick it in your fridge overnight. Now, the next day, pull it out of your fridge and then divide it into about 2.5 to 3 ounce portions, or anywhere from 80 to 100 gram portions for your dough. And I think my grams might be a little off there, but about 2.5 to 3 ounces should do the trick. And then you're going to round the dough. And the way that you form the dough is you take these little weighed out balls, flatten them out, fold in all the edges into the center and kind of pinch the edges, and then put that seam, that pinched seam, down on a work surface. And sometimes it helps to wet it a little bit. And the dough will stick to that as you roll the dough. And the way that you want to roll the dough is basically by pressing down on the top of this formed ball and make a circular motion with your hand while trying to push it through the table. And what that's going to do is it's going to form a nice tight ball. Now, at this point, you want to allow them to proof on a sheet tray, which you're going to bake. And most of the time, you'll use a what's called a tart ring. These are the short little metal rings that you place the brioche bun inside of. And it helps to keep the bun shape as it proofs and as it bakes and goes through that oven spring process during the first initial stages of baking. So you can order those tart rings online. They also have brioche pans that are basically baking pans with the indentations in them. And then Chef Steps, I'm going to link to their brioche bread recipe. And they use foil rings, which they make, which seem to work really well. They basically just create a foil strip and then staple them together. And those work as well. And that way you don't have to go out and order your the tart rings. But I have a bunch of tart rings at the restaurant, so that's what I use. So once you allow them to proof, you're basically looking to let them proof, I would say, about 2 hours, but you really want to look at the volume. And, don't let them exceed more than two times their original volume, but you really want to get them just a little bit under that. And then brush them with an egg wash. So you can do water and whole eggs. You can do milk and whole eggs. If you want that glossy exterior where it's shiny, then use just egg yolks. And that's going to give you that glossy exterior. And then you can sprinkle with sesame seeds, sprinkle with poppy seeds. And then you want to bake in your oven, usually at about 300 degrees Fahrenheit, 375 degrees Fahrenheit, until a rich golden brown. But really, I mean, instead of giving you a specific recipe to follow, I really want to talk to you more based upon your questions, talking to you about how amylase will affect your brioche dough recipe, how delayed fermentation will affect your brioche dough recipe, and most importantly, how you incorporate the fats into your brioche dough will affect the finished product. So for your burger buns, you want to be searching for a brioche recipe that allows the dough to hydrate first before incorporating the fat, does a delayed fermentation overnight to give the finished dough or the finished burger buns a more complex flavor. And that's pretty much it. Now, a really good book on the subject that I think you should get because you'll really enjoy it is called Bakewise. And it's by Shirley O'Carrier, I think is how you pronounce her last name. Carrier. But just search for Bakewise on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. And she has a couple really awesome brioche recipes in there. And one that's more of a cake style and one that's more of a bread style. So I hope this rambling on brioche answered your question. I do apologize to anybody else besides Wartface who's listening to this, because I know Wartface is digging this discussion on baker's percentage and brioche. But don't say I didn't warn you. But I'll tell you what, you can get your own rambling answer from me and my buddies answering your cooking questions just by simply going to askchefjacob.com. Click the audio record button that's embedded in that page, and you can get your question answered as well. And that's it for this episode of Ask Chef Jacob. Thanks so much for hanging in there with me. For this episode's show notes, go to askchefjacob.com. Look for the episode 1 link. And then follow that link into our show notes page. We'll all have supporting links, information, a comment section where you can ask follow-up questions and all that great stuff. Also, you can ask your own question at ashchefjacob.com or by shooting me an email at jacob@stellaculinary.com. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you next time.